Malaise in markets worldwide. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore in for David Brancaccio. Around the world, markets are not looking so hot today. This morning, China's Shanghai Composite and the Hang Seng Index in Hong Kong both dropped 2%. Japan's Nikkei dropped 3%. Meanwhile, investors are hurling cash at safe government bonds. Australian and New Zealand bonds, bond yields hit record lows. German bond yields are at practically zero after going negative last week. Marketplace's Justin Ho is right here. Justin, help us out. What's happening?
So the narrative this morning is really about slowing global growth. We had a bunch of rather downbeat economic data out of Europe last week. And here in the U.S., the National Association for Business Economics put out a report this morning saying that growth will slow down this year to 2.4% and drop to just 2% next year. The report actually pointed to slower global growth as one of the reasons behind the slowdown in the U.S. Another big culprit, the administration's trade policies.
And I'm guessing it did not help that Friday we saw this thing, a yield curve inversion for the first time since 2007, just mean bond investors are worried.
Right, exactly. So as a reminder, an inverted yield curve is often considered a warning sign of a recession. It means bond markets think growth will slow down in the long term. So on Friday, Chicago Fed President Charles Evans was asked about this on CNBC. Here's what he said.
I think we have to be a little bit nervous, obviously. Whenever the yield curve gets flat, we see growth decelerating.
Still, Evans also pointed out that economic fundamentals in the U.S. are still pretty strong, and slowing growth is still growth. We'll hear more about that on that growth on Thursday when the Commerce Department releases its final GDP report for 2018.
Marketplace's Justin Ho, thanks.
You're welcome.
So let's take a look at the numbers. The FTSE in London is down 0.1%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are about flat. The 10-year Treasury yield, that sign of investor confidence in the future that Justin just mentioned, is at 2.47%. Last week, it was closer to 2.6%. Later today, we expect Apple to launch some kind of streaming TV service. Apple will offer some original content plus, reportedly, subscriptions to channels like HBO or Showtime for an extra fee. But with so many cord-cutting options out there already, consumers are starting to feel video streaming fatigue. Marketplace's tech host Molly Wood has more.
I know it sounds like I'm describing a new cable service. But if Apple does roll out some kind of service that lets you sign up one time for a bundle of streaming apps and get them in this nice, clean Apple interface, but without all the channels you don't want, that probably will appeal to a lot of people. If Apple's service is a big success, it could pressure Netflix or other holdouts to get on board, kind of like Apple forced the whole music industry into digital downloads a long time ago. And all of that is the same for news. Yes, please, to a consolidated subscription service where I can pay once for the 10 newspapers I now pay for separately. There's a lot of benefit to Apple in being the middleman here. The company reportedly wants 50% of new news subscriptions, and we can guess it would take at least 30% of video streaming subscriptions, too. That's kind of its standard fee for apps and purchases on its iTunes platform now. Do publishers like it? No way. But again, you can bet that a lot of people are going to want this one-stop shop. And so it's possible they won't be able to afford to stay out.
Marketplace tech host Molly Wood.
Not everyone gets a chance to study the economy in school. Anyway, who doesn't need a brush up? Marketplace helps you continue your education in a way that we hope is smart, accessible, and hopefully even a bit fun. Your donation is not only an investment in your own learning, but also in helping us make more people smart about the economy. And that, we think, is good for everyone. To learn how you can help, visit marketplace.org/investors. Thank you.
Picture this. You get a new job, a good job, in one of America's big, growing cities. You move there and discover the rent. It's astronomical and it doesn't buy you much. Housing is getting more expensive in the United States. Rents in new apartments are up 28% over the past decade. And the problem's especially acute in certain big cities, the Bay Area, Boston, LA, New York. Emily Hamilton is a research fellow at George Mason University's Mercatus Center. And she says a lot of this is because of local zoning policy. Good morning, Emily.
Good morning.
So I live in New York. I'm no stranger to rents that are ridiculously, stupidly high for basically a hole-in-the-wall rat trap where you have to walk three blocks to do your laundry. Make the connection to zoning for me.
Yes, lots of land use regulations, primarily zoning, stand in the way of adding to housing supply in places like New York City. So you'll see new buildings in neighborhoods like Tribeca that are the same size as the old buildings that they're replacing rather than adding new capacity. And in cities across the country, large areas are zoned for only single-family homes. So there's not the ability there to add a lot of new housing supply to accommodate new residents.
Why is that, though? I mean, is this NIMBYism, not in my backyard, people attempting to restrict growth because they just don't want more neighbors? Or like, how did we get to this situation?
Homeowners are more likely to vote than renters, and they're more likely to stay in the same jurisdiction over time. So land use policy tends to reflect their preferences, and they stand to benefit from not allowing new housing to be built, which makes their homes more valuable. And also they just might like their neighborhood the way it is.
But, you know, if you allow like new shiny buildings to go up where they couldn't go up before, does that not risk creating more gentrification as well? I mean, aren't you going to push people who can't afford that new building out?
Yes, that's certainly a valid concern. I prefer to think about it in terms of displacement, since gentrification can have a lot of meanings. But the concern with displacement is that when you have new high-end construction coming in to replace older buildings that were less expensive, residents who have lived in a neighborhood for a while may no longer be able to afford rents in their neighborhood. But preventing development is no way to prevent displacement. Under a more flexible land use policy in cities like Houston, we see new construction that is much more affordable when you have lower land prices because of less stringent land use regulations. It's feasible for new development not to be so expensive.
Emily Hamilton is a research fellow at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University and co-author of The Link Between Local Zoning Policy and Housing Affordability in America's Cities. Thanks so much. It was good to talk to you.
Thanks, Sabri. Great talking with you.
In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.